delicious couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you are listening to another exciting episode of Fat Guys at the Movies, the show with twice as many fat guys as that show called Fat Guy at the Movies. So, there.
which is produced in, like, Malaysia, and it's just a ripoff of our show.
It is, pretty much. It's like Afghanistani Spider-Man, or whatever that one was.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that, only it's a movie podcast, and, you know, it has more listeners than we do, because it's kitschy and strange, and hipsters like it. So, but we're going to continue to play to our core audience, which, hi, Mom.
she doesn't listen anymore.
I know, right?
Fooling yourself.
She listens to Reject Radio because I'm not on it anymore. Anyway.
Well, hey, for a while there, you weren't on this show, so it doesn't really make a difference.
Here's how you can get a hold of us if you're really itching to. You can go over to fatguysthemovies.com, which is working as of right now.
Yeah.
You can go to iTunes and search iTunes to search Fat Guys at the Movies, and we come right up. You can then download us, review us, subscribe to us, put us on your iPad or iDevices, or as I found out with my new toy tonight, you can listen to Fat Guys the Movies on your Apple TV, which I don't plan on doing, but knowing that I can is always good.
Will it put a big picture of us in high definition?
Pretty much.
We should put a 1080 resolution picture of me and my belly.
I don't think we should. Anyway, you can also email us if you'd like, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, area code 740-205-6456.
Oh, hey, we got a voicemail. No, that was from you.
Oh, that was just me breathing, going, Kevin, why aren't we recording yet? So there. You can also get us on Facebook, just search Fat Guys at the Movies, or on the Twitter. I am twitter.com/rejects, and Kevin is twitter.com/KevinCarr. All right. I say we move into these movies.
We suddenly have a lot to talk about this week.
Yeah, we actually are going to cover 5 movies this week.
Not well.
4 of which have been seen by us, but we're going to start with the one that we have not seen, and it is For Colored Girls, in which Tyler Perry directs another movie that press wasn't allowed to see, starring Whoopi Goldberg.
Another song with no singers. Lyrics, no voices. Unseen performances.
Ordinary. Brown braided woman with big legs and full lips. Become yourself.
I got a real dead loving here for you now.
I guess this is goodbye.
Like you've never seen it before.
That's all I have to say about this movie. Nothing.
Let me say this. I will just briefly, because I want to move on to the next movie because I'm curious about it. This is a movie about it's kind of a collection of poems type movie. So it's a little bit of
this is not enticing me to see it.
it is a very different kind of movie for Tyler Perry. You know, obviously because Madea isn't in it. But it's more of a vignette-style film. And there's been a lot of talk about it. I mean, neither one of us have seen it, obviously, but there have been a lot of screenings of it in New York and L.A., and there's a lot of Oscar potential talk to it. So I'm interested to see it as compared to his other stuff. Because, you know, he's very much into those family-driven comedies that all kind of follow the same formula and recycle a lot of the same jokes, and
he basically does gospel plays.
Right, they work, but this is a completely different kind of movie. You know, this feels like very. I mean, you know, it still has its roots, and it still has its cultural specificity.
Wow.
But
big words by Neil Miller.
But it's more about women's issues and specifically colored women.
You're making me not want to see this movie.
so I'm curious, whether or not Kevin Carr wants to go see it is irrelevant. I am curious to see it and see if Tyler Perry finally stretches his legs a little bit. Because, I mean, all of his movies, feel the same. And he's becoming
the same damn movie.
The Woody Allen of telling stories of color,
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, instead of being Jewish, he's black. That's pretty much it. So I'm curious. I'm curious to see how it goes.
You heard it here first. Tyler Perry is the large black Woody Allen.
the non-Jewish Woody Allen.
The gospel black Julie.
But I will
Woody
say
Allen.
This. It's apparently based on a really good play. So,
yeah.
Who knows? And Whoopi Goldberg did win an Oscar, so don't make fun of Whoopi.
What? So, yeah, okay, she won an Oscar. So did Kim Basinger, for this matter, so come
fair
on.
Enough. Cool. Let's move on to the other movie, though, the movie that you have seen, at least, and the movie I am very curious about this week.
Which also involves a colored person.
He's just blue.
He's blue.
This one is Megamind, in which a genius alien becomes a nemesis of a superhero and then has to deal with the aftermath of actually defeating him.
Our battles quickly got more elaborate.
You've fallen right into my trap.
You can't trap justice.
He would win some. I would almost win others. He took the name Metroman.
I decided to pick something a little more humble.
Megamind. Incredibly handsome master of all villainy.
Woo!
This will be the last you ever hear of Roxanne Ritchie.
Don't panic, Roxy.
I'm not panicking.
I'm on my way.
Oh! I'm shaking in my custom baby seal leather boots.
One of the things about this movie that I really appreciated, it reminded me a lot of Monsters vs. Aliens in the sense that it was an original story. I mean, it pulls from, you know, same, you know, we've seen a lot of these themes before, but what I got to give the credit to the DreamWorks people, with the exception of Shrek, everything that they do tends to be unique. It's not just an adaptation of a fairy tale or something like that.
You know, it's not like Pixar remaking Seven Samurai to make a Bug's Life.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, you see so often you see these animated films and it's just, you know, it's an adaptation of something, or even, you know, Romeo and Juliet and Tangled, which is a Rapunzel story and all these kind of things. This one is actually a completely different movie, and it has that sort of retro future look that Monsters vs. Aliens had, and also The Incredibles had to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
It looks fantastic. Got to see it in IMAX, in 3D. It looks beautiful. And it also kind of reminds me a little bit of Despicable Me, where you have this this villain who kind of has to step up to the plate. Now, with that said, it's not awesome. It has some parts that slow down and get a little awkward at times. And the Tina Fey character, the reporter who's sort of like... the girlfriend, the Lois Lane character, she's kind of flat and doesn't do anything. I mean, she's got boobs, but she's just sort of nothing in the movie. That's, you know,
she's animated
in a figurative sense,
but
yes.
She artistic standpoint is flat. I got you.
And you have, and it actually does kind of draw a little bit too much at times from The Incredibles, because Jonah Hill plays a sort of syndrome-esque kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, just what I love about these animated films is you can actually do a good, solid superhero movie that doesn't necessarily have to be Batman or Superman or The Flash or something
right.
like that. And it looks great, and it's a lot of fun. It runs 90 minutes. It comes in, it's in and out, and it's a neat little movie. And like I said, I compare it to Monsters vs. Aliens in enjoyability and the ability to connect with an adult audience as much as a kid's audience.
Fair enough. So, I haven't seen it, but as I said, I'm curious because it doesn't look like a very exciting movie. But then again, How to Train Your Dragon didn't look very exciting, and you know, that's one of the better movies of the year.
And so, Despicable Me, same thing. You watch Despicable Me and you're like, what the hell is this movie about?
Right.
And you watch the trailer.
And I loved Monsters vs. Aliens, so I'll probably be checking it out this weekend if I have some time.
It's worth seeing. If you can see it in the IMAX, it's actually worth paying the extra price because it looks fantastic.
Give us the official grade and then we got to go to break.
Kind of rocks, and For Colored Girls gets a preemptive suck from both of us.
Fair enough. And we are back here on Fat Guys at the Movies, and we're
word
getting
up.
Closer.
Did I just say word up? That doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. But we're getting a lot closer to movies that I've seen this week, which I've seen two, you've seen two. I think we're even this week. This is a big deal.
You saw those in Sundance, though, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I saw neither one of these at Sundance.
Austin Film Festival?
Austin Film Festival was one of them, and South by Southwest was the other one.
Okay, see, there you go. You have three times that you get to see movies, and that is it.
Yeah.
Unless there's a Michael Bay movie involved.
I take advantage of them.
That's true.
But we'll do the other one that I have not seen that's probably... the most heavily advertised movie of the week, I think. The movie I've seen the most about.
Well, on grown-up stations. I mean,
yeah,
they're not exactly... No,
I mean, Megamind, I'm sure, is all over the kids' stations. Yeah. But
they're not doing Due Date all over like Nickelodeon.
Yeah, but it is Due Date, in which Robert Downey Jr. plays a man trying to get home to see the birth of his child with an eccentric, awkward man in tow.
If you're going to travel with me to Los Angeles, I got to give you a couple guidelines. Number one, don't ask me a single question.
What's your favorite color? What age did you lose your virginity? Do you like hot dogs? I once ate a foot-long corn dog on a nude beach. I'll never do that again.
Number two,
if you're allergic to waffles, don't eat waffles.
Then don't take me to a Waffle House.
If I miss the birth of my child, I'm gonna choke you out with your own scarf.
Seems a bit drastic.
And that eccentric, awkward man is, of course, Zach Galifianakis.
Zach Galifianakis. Now, just a little bit of a note: if you've ever said anything anti-Semitic in your life, he is going to personally ask you to not come to the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Well, you know what's? Well, no, you know what that joke is for.
I have no idea.
That's a Mel Gibson reference. Supposedly, the rumor was it was Zach Galifianakis who kind of bitched about Mel Gibson being in Hangover 2.
Oh, dude, how did I miss all of this?
I don't know. This is the second week in a row where I brought a news story that everybody knows that you weren't aware about.
I didn't know that it was Zach. I knew about the Mel Gibson Hangover thing, but I didn't know about Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, the rumor is, well, according to Todd Phillips, it was just a bunch of people in the crew, but supposedly Zach Galifianakis was the one to push. Which is really funny because he makes an anti-Semitic joke in the beginning of the movie, which I found really funny. Not the joke. The joke was okay, but it's just the fact he was the one saying it.
The irony,
yeah,
of Zach Galifianakis' anti-Semitic comments inside of a movie.
Yes. Now,
it was his character, though, man.
Yeah.
It wasn't the real Zach Galifianakis.
Well, I mean, Mel Gibson was just playing a character. He was playing the drunk Mel Gibson.
He was playing drunk Mel Gibson. Just like he moonlights as Drunk Hulk on Twitter.
Yes. I love Drunk Hulk.
Anyway, so here's a question with Due Date.
Yeah.
This looks funny enough, I'm sure. Robert Downey Jr., very funny. Zach Galifianakis, very funny.
Yes.
Do they work together well?
Well, here's the thing. They work together well. And both of them do a lot with what they're given.
Yeah.
But they're sort of pushing this as very similar to The Hangover because it's got Zach Galifianakis. It's directed by Todd Phillips. It has that, and it has that R-rated Hangover edge to it. The problem is this is more on the lines of sort of like the kind of humor you see in something like Observe and Report, where it's very edgy, it's very sardonic, and like not in a bright and cheery way at times. And there are a couple points. There's in fact a scene Danny McBride shows up in it, and I'm watching it. And I'm like going, this looks like it's just come right out of Observe and Report because it's real dark. And part of what made The Hangover work is if you look at the characters, you have Zach Galifianakis plays a very similar character to what he played in The Hangover. And Robert Downey Jr. plays very similar to the kind of character that Bradley Cooper played. Maybe if Bradley Cooper's character was older and a little bit more mean, that's what you'd have with Robert Downey Jr. What they're missing is the Ed Helms character, which is kind of like the happy time glue that... makes everything a little more lighthearted. You take that out and it becomes really heavy. Now, it has some funny moments, but overall it was almost a little too dark for me. And like I said, it's funny. Downey Jr. is fantastic in it. And Zach Galifianakis does a great job too. But it's just, I don't know if it's as, it's not going to, I just don't see it being as relatable to everybody else in the mainstream world as like The Hangover was. The Hangover just kind of clicked.
Yeah.
And this one doesn't quite. It has some great scenes in it, though. But,
fair enough.
Yeah. For me,
I didn't see it, so I have no idea what... I don't know.
Yeah. I tweeted out, I said it's like the Observe and Report version of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Which is exactly what it is.
Okay.
So I'm actually going to say it kind of sucks. I wasn't terribly impressed with it.
Okay. There's that.
So you wanted to talk about a couple films that you saw once.
We do. We have a few, and these are both limited releases that are hitting this week. One of which I saw last week, the first of which I saw last week at the Austin Film Festival, and another one I saw at South by Southwest. And both are of special note because they're both really great movies and movies that I would encourage people to go out and see. The first is 127 Hours. It is Danny Boyle's new film in which James Franco plays Aaron Ralston, who is the he's a hiker. Well, he's kind of an adventurer who goes out and has an accident and gets stuck in this crevice in Utah and gets his arm pinned underneath a rock and is stuck there for 127 hours, thus the title. And I will say this, there's a few striking things about this movie. I know it's only opening in 4 theaters right now this weekend, but in the coming weeks, it's going to open wider and wider and wider.
Actually, Film School Rejects is running a
we're doing a screening?
Screening of it, yeah. So if you can go.
When is that, next week?
The 17th, I think, something like that.
17th? Yeah, so later, it's Fox Searchlight, so they're doing one of those slow rollouts, as they always do. So I'm sure we'll talk about it again at some point. But I will say this. Danny Boyle does just this intensely cool job of creating a touch-and-feel type of movie where he shoots a lot of close-ups of very early on that establish the fact that you are supposed to feel the same connection to nature that the character does and that you kind of feel the same things that he's feeling. And it's this kind of impact-heavy filmmaking that creates, that builds towards all of the moments where he starts to get really sick because he's been stuck in this rock, and
do zombies ever show up?
No, that's not. He goes to great lengths to free himself.
Would this be a good like double feature with Buried?
actually, it'd be a great double feature with Buried because it's a single, really a single performance movie, and James Franco is fantastic in playing. There's some humor in it. Mm-hmm. There's some really scary stuff in it. There's some really intense moments of very violent moments of him trying to escape and stuff like that. And anybody who has a Wikipedia can look up and see what happened to the actual Aaron Ralston and know that there is a moment in this movie that will cause you to shake. It caused me to shake uncontrollably. It was so uncomfortable to watch.
Here, you know, the thing is, with Danny Boyle, I there are a few directors where I'll say this to, but I will see anything Danny Boyle does. Because even if you look at it and he could sit there and say, I'm going to do a romantic comedy, and I'd be like, it'd be awesome. Because he's one of the few directors I know who can work in almost any genre. You know, you take something like 28 Days Later versus Sunshine versus Millions versus Trainspot. I mean, they're all these genres are all over the place. I mean, to Slumdog Millionaire, which he goes Bollywood. I mean, he's a chameleon director and can do a fantastic movie in any genre where some directors really are kind of just stuck in doing one kind of film.
Right. And here he creates this very visceral movie about, you know, one man's essentially torture. And it's really intense. Not quite as intense as Black Swan, which I also saw last week, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, okay.
But very good, very great performance from James Franco. And just like any Danny Boyle movie, there's this element to it where you're kind of feeling the what the character is feeling. And let me tell you, there's a moment where when you start to feel that, it's very uncomfortable to watch.
Did you happen to get your arm stuck in the seat in the process? And
no.
You're like, my arm's stuck, I can't get to my popcorn.
All right, and the other movie I have, since we've only got a minute left, I'm going to kind of bust through it very fast, is Four Lions, which is it's being released by Drafthouse Films, which is the
Alamo
distribution arm of the Alamo Drafthouse here in Austin, Texas. And it's opening in, I think, 8 cities.
Wow.
And they're going to try and release it a little bit wider later on. It is the essential terrorism comedy of our generation.
Oh, I thought Postal was that.
But it's basically about these four wannabe terrorists in London, jihadists, who are not too bright with their terrorism plot. In fact, at one point they dress up and hide bombs in costumes. One of them is dressed as a Ninja Turtle. Wow. So it's a Ninja Turtle terrorist. It is very funny, and it's really hard to take a subject like that is still so touchy and make it funny in earnest and not silly. It's you know, it's a
it's not the Three Stooges do
right. It's not Three Stooges do terrorism. It is a very straightforward but funny film, and I would urge you to go out and seek it out because it's one of the better independent films I've seen all year.
Cool. So and that's that. All you see. So hey.
And there you go. Time for a break. We'll be back.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Yeah. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. This is the middle segment, the infamous middle segment.
Is it infamous, though? I don't know.
It is infamous. It's so famous.
I'm not buying it.
Infamous.
It's non-famous. The non-famous middle segment.
No, it's infamous.
It's out famous.
In which Neil Miller
finally.
In which Neil Miller is going to complain about not having eaten yet today.
This
I'm pretty
is
sure
true.
You've eaten today. You've eaten today.
I ate earlier, but that was hours ago. Hours.
That was like 127 minutes ago.
140 hours ago I ate. Gosh. Oh,
Jesus.
That would be like, what, last Thursday or something?
Something like that. Good Lord.
Anyway.
Are we ready to talk about stuff?
Yeah, so let's talk about the box office last week. I think we expected Saw to win.
Saw won with the. You know what was funny is, I'm going to bitch a little bit about Nikki Fink, who I think gives fantastic data, but she gives like absolutely piss poor analysis of things. Because on the early return, she's like, Saw's totally underperforming and disappointing at that point it was the estimate was $28 million. It turned out to be $25 million or 24 and change. Which was actually $25 million was exactly played exactly to expectations. All the reports I was seeing is mid-20s.
So what did the last Saw movie do?
It did like 17, I think. It was pretty. It did better than.
Yeah, I mean, what do they really expect? Yeah. And it's a movie that cost what $20 million to make. So $23-24 million in the opening weekend is. Yeah. Seems right in line with where
exactly,
Lionsgate wanted it.
Yeah, and she starts off her analysis saying, I hate the Saw movie, they shouldn't. And I'm like, well, okay, just give us the damn numbers, because I like the fact you give them to us on Friday night. but quit overanalyzing something badly.
Right. And it's already beaten Saw 6.
Yeah. I mean, it's doing exactly what they'd expect. It's not making tons of money. It's not doing what like Jackass did when Jackass suddenly was like $50 million, and people were like, what the hell? So I don't think it's breathing any new life into the Saw franchise, but I think they're very happy with how it's playing out. So
right, and they can make these movies on the cheap. So yeah. At that point, it just does not matter. It made all of its money. The Saw series in total has made something like $400 million.
Yeah, it does very well for itself, and
right, and it's cost probably less than 100 to make seven of those movies.
Well, and the thing is, the amount of money it made enough to it's going to clear, it's going to do well, but it didn't make so much money that they're going to rethink it and do a Saw 8 next year. Give it 5-6 years, they'll do a reboot.
Saw, it'll be Saw the Awakening.
Yeah, Saw the Beginning. Yes.
The beginning before Saw.
Yeah. So that one did well.
Pre-Saw.
Did fine. Paranormal Activity plummeted, but everyone expected that.
Yeah. They finally got some competition.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. It was two horror movies, boom, boom, right after each other.
Right. I will say this. Red is holding tough.
Red's finishing
in third.
Red's there's actually a bunch of them that are holding pretty nicely. Red, Secretariat, those kind of things. Whereas like Hereafter is hemorrhaging. Mm-hmm.
Town still sticking around in top 10.
The Town's still doing well. What was the other new movie last week? What was it? I forget.
Hereafter?
No, Hereafter was 2 weeks ago. See,
there wasn't another new movie last week, wasn't there?
Oh, no, you know what it is? I was talking about Conviction, because I talked about, but that was in limited
Conviction
release.
Finished 10th.
Conviction is not doing well. And, I got to see Tron Night. I got to go to Tron Night last week.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
It looks awesome. Have you seen the footage? Like
no.
I mean, I've maybe
it's
online,
the Comic-Con footage, though. I'm told.
As I'm told, it's the Comic-Con footage. But I'll tell you what's interesting about Tron. I'll just mention this: is I went to see Tron Night, and they showed, like I said, they showed the Comic-Con footage, and they showed some of the 3D stuff, a lot of the 3D stuff. Because if you don't know this, the beginning of the movie that takes place in the real world is not in 3D. When they go into the grid, it's suddenly 3D.
That's a cool little trick.
Yeah, it's neat. But I'll tell you, then like a couple hours later, I went to go see Saw, and it was just regular projected digital 3D, and they had a Tron trailer. So I actually got to see, within a couple hours of itself, Tron on the IMAX 3D, and then just Tron in a regular digital 3D presentation. And I'll tell you, you can tell that it looks so much better in IMAX. It is fantastic looking in IMAX. Now, is it going to be Avatar? I don't know. Avatar was such an aberration, but...
Yeah.
But I think this is going to be one of those movies that's worth seeing in IMAX 3D, which you only get one. They release a lot of stuff in IMAX.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the one of the few that's like Resident Evil, even though I didn't think it was a great movie. If you're going to go see that one on IMAX 3D because it looks great.
Right.
Avatar was the same way. So I'm looking forward to Tron because people are like, well, you know, Garrett Hedlund doing a great job. And I'm like, Sam Worthington was a shitty actor too. And stop people from seeing Avatar.
Yeah, no, that did not stop Avatar from making several $1 billion.
Exactly.
But yeah, I agree. Tron is to me is such a hit or miss. It is either going to hit really big and make hundreds of millions of dollars in its first few weeks, or it's going to hit really soft. And by soft, I mean opening to 50 million at Christmas time and kind of pittering out around 200 total. And not even creeping anywhere near Iron Man 2. So I have a feeling, though, that audiences are hungry for a big movie. They're going to be hungry for a big movie by then because, all you have in between now and Tron is Harry Potter. And Harry Potter comes out very early compared to Tron.
Skyline is going to be kind of that.
Yeah, I'm kind of discarding movies like Skyline.
Well, but also I think when Tron opens, I think the next big sort of movie that would compete with it in terms of the marketplace would be maybe Green Hornet.
Right, which comes out in what, February?
It's January, but it's a couple weeks.
I don't think that'll compete too hard with it.
Yeah, I did. Well, because again, Tron is one of those that's going to be worth seeing in the big screen. And when I say big screen, I mean the big, huge IMAX screen.
A big, giant-ass IMAX screen. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. So let's predict this coming week. We've got, the big four? Well, actually, no. We've got two.
We've got big.
You got Due Date and Megamind are really
And Four Color Girls, but I think Four Color Girls
will place, I guess.
It'll do well. Color Girls is good for like the 20s, which is what is very typical of Tyler Perry.
Mm-hmm. But you got two big-ish movies. You got a big adult comedy and you got a big animated film. I think the animated film wins.
Oh, easy.
Based on wideness of audience alone.
Yeah. It's a DreamWorks, everyone identifies with that, and I think it's very easy to sell to kids. I took my kids, they loved it, and we just went to McDonald's tonight and got Happy Meals. It's got Megamind toys in it.
Oh, Megamind Happy Meals. Maybe that's what I'll eat after we're done recording. A Megamind Happy Meal.
Well, you can do that.
I hope I get the Brad Pitt doll.
Just don't do it in San Francisco, that's all I'm saying.
Wow.
Well, you know that, don't you? They outlawed Happy Meals in San Francisco.
Do you like follow news that I don't? How do I not know this news?
They banned Happy
That's
Meals.
That's a big deal
in San Francisco.
So, yeah. But do they still sell the McRib?
I don't know because they're not marketing it to children. So I do think I don't personally like the McRib, but I love the fact that it's so popular
that people are thinking of the McRib at all times.
Yeah. I don't think Due Date's going to do very well because, A, it's not The Hangover, and they're billing it kind of as Hangover 2. I just don't think it's going to have that great of word of mouth, and it's kind of an R-rated comedy, and it's kind of in a weird time for that. It's not. Mm-hmm. And it's going up against, Megamind is the big thing. And we've just come off a string of R-rated hits through October, so I think it's, kind of the pendulum's going to swing back on this one.
Okay.
So that's my...
I agree. I think Megamind is going to win. I think Due Date will place high. It'll place in the top 3. But and then for the Color Girls should be somewhere in the middle of the top 10. And then everybody else is behind. I think Saw will take a good drop.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody who's really wanted to see Saw has pretty much seen it.
Saw will be less than $10 million. Easy.
So who knows? Red might even beat it.
Possible.
All right, cool. So that's box office predictions. Time to move on to Fat Guy 5, yeah. Which this week is favorite road movies. And I think we've got a pretty solid... I'm excited about this list, personally.
With how haphazardly we threw this together, it's an awesome list.
But there are awesome road movies out there. Due Date is trying to be the next one, and that'll be determined, of course, by history. But we have decided that these are five of the greatest road movies of all time.
Yes.
The first one is The Blues Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what could be better than a mission from God that leads you across the country singing and dancing and jiving and whatnots? And whatnot. You know, R.I.P. John Belushi.
Yes.
So, there you go.
The next one is Death Race 2000, not the remake. And as much as I love Paul W.S. Anderson, Death Race was his low point. But
the OG, you're talking about the OG Death Race 2000.
Yes, the original with Paul Bartel. And David Carradine pre-choking himself out in a hotel room with a naked Sylvester Stallone and running over old people and kids and babies. Fantastic satirical film from the 70s. Probably one of the best films Roger Corman was associated with ever in his entire
life. Fair enough. Definitely one of the most recognizable films that Roger Corman has been involved with. And probably the most expensive.
Yeah, but it's a fantastic movie. I still have a copy. I have a copy of it. I love it. I ever watch now then watch it.
Well done, I say. Yeah. All right, I'm gonna throw in another.
I'll do the next one because
I'm just gonna go with one of mine. I'm not going in order. The next one is one of my all-time favorite road movies, which is not a road of this world, in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes.
Directed by Garth Jennings. It stems from one of perhaps the most awesome books of all time. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, for better or worse, it's a little bit different than the book, and it is a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
You know, Bilbo Baggins is really good in it.
Yeah.
And who doesn't love Alan Rickman as the depressing robot?
As Marvin, so. The depressed robot. Yes,
exactly.
42. That's the answer.
42 is indeed the answer.
Oh. The next one on my list, our list, is what's funny is there's actually a list of unconventional road movies on Film School Rejects right now. I contributed to it. Yeah,
really?
Amazing.
I need to go read that.
Oh, yeah. And I contributed to that, even though I don't think any of my contributions got on the list. But, you know, hey, kudos for giving me the byline credit. one of my suggestions was The Empire Strikes Back, because even though it's not a road, it is really just a giant road trip. They leave Hoth at the beginning and end up at Cloud City. And you know, Luke goes to Dagobah, but ends up in close. These are, and if you really watch, if you look at the study, the sort of like the dynamic of the Millennium Falcon in that, it is just a road movie. It's just a bunch of people tooling around on the road, you know, flying through space, avoiding stormtroopers. And so it's one of the best Star Wars movies out there, or probably the best Star Wars movie of the six.
And the one that I have not seen all the way through.
You have not? What? Are you kidding me? Seriously?
We're throwing that in, like, in the little liner notes of this episode somewhere.
Is that the truth, or are you just...
That is the truth. I've never seen it all the way through.
You're dead to me, Neil Miller.
I've had many a chance, and I will at some point see it. When it comes out on Blu-ray, I'll watch them all.
Oh, you're an idiot.
At some point. But
I can't believe. Shame on you.
I'm not from that generation.
You should be ashamed of yourself. I don't care. Yes, you could have in 1997, when you were six.
When I was six. I wasn't six.
How old were you in 1997?
97?
Yeah.
I would have been 14.
They re-released all three movies, like 97, 98.
I didn't really know about movies back then.
I hate you.
Anyway, the last one is a movie that I saw in my childhood, and perhaps one of my all-time favorite.
Ironically, it came out, I think, the same year as The Empire Strikes Back.
The
like
Muppet
a year,
movie.
Or the year before.
The Muppet movie, one of the great Jim Henson
Moving down the road in search of good times and good news.
And it puts Fozzie Bear in his natural habitat, which, of course, is a Studebaker.
A Studebaker.
The Muppet movie just goes off the rails as a road movie.
Yes.
So, there you go. And, you know, honorable mention is whatever's in your mind right now, because I'm sure somebody's out there like, Mad Max.
You didn't say
like
this!
But these are our five, and I think this is probably one of the better lists we've ever done.
It's amazing how much chaos can reign on this one.
Yep. Time to go to a break. When we come back, we got a quick segment, wrap you up, get you out of here, and on to the movies.
And Neil can get something to eat.
Woohoo!
and watch the entire Empire Strikes Back.
Woohoo! And we are wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. If you missed the third or middle segment because you're listening to us on the radio, I would urge you not to listen to it because there's very embarrassing facts about my life.
Very bad, embarrassing. I mean, I don't think it could be more embarrassing.
I personally would hope that you not go to the internet or iTunes or wherever you can download Fat Guys in the Movies and down and listen to that segment just for that reason, because it's very embarrassing and I would hate for that information to get out.
Shame.
However, I will say Fat Guy 5 this week, awesome.
Yes.
So, moving on to perhaps the next most non-famous thing that we do.
That makes no sense.
The world famous DVD Roundup. And we'll start. I've got a couple picks
this
week.
You start because you like to pick all the good ones.
I've got Highlander and Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Is it is it the director's cut of the Highlander 2?
You know, hold on. Let me find out.
Oh,
Highlander 2 includes...
Because I understand they're very different movies.
It is not the director's cut.
Oh, so the theatrical cut. Wow. The alien storyline?
Yeah, that's there. So Highlander 2 came out on Blu-ray. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't buy those. Can't think of any reasons.
Exactly. I don't know why anyone wouldn't buy that. What?
The Goonies is out on Blu-ray. I cannot certify it as awesome because they sent me the DVD.
What?
The big 25th edition DVD, and they sent it to me. And the DVD inside is the same DVD that I bought like 10 years ago, which is really disappointing.
Did you get the box set with the Blu-ray? Oh, with the video? With the board
game?
Yeah,
I mean, it's the box set with all the games and the stuff and all the other crap, but it's the same DVD from... Yeah.
Well, the Blu-ray's just the same. The Blu-ray's been released before. It's just this is the 25th
anniversary. Right. If you don't have it on Blu-ray, go buy it on Blu-ray.
It's like Warner Brothers.
Otherwise, just whatever.
Like a year ago, Warner Brothers released The Hangover on Blu-ray, and
now they release it again.
They released it again, and all it is the only thing different is it just has a photo album in there with more photos in it.
Yeah, The Pacific is on Blu-ray, which is an awesome miniseries. Just awesome.
Awesome.
And then the one that blew me away this week was The Sound of Music. Top spot in my weekly Blu-ray column.
No kidding.
It looks absolutely gorgeous and sounds great and is very long, as I now am reminded.
It
has an intermission.
How long is it? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's a long movie.
But I will say this, Julie Andrews, that whole first shot where it comes over the hill and she starts singing and she just belts it out, it's great.
Yeah.
Looks amazing.
Do you know what Christopher Plummer calls The Sound of Music? The Sound of Mucus.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, and that's just because probably everywhere he went after that movie, they were like, can you sing Edelweiss? And he's like, don't.
Oh, poor Christopher Plummer.
Yeah.
He was a handsome man.
He was a good looking dude.
Let me say that. Yeah. All right, what are your picks?
Since you took the big ones, I'm going to go throw down something.
I took Highlander and Highlander 2. Those are not the big
Goonies
ones.
The Goonies and the Sound of Music, man.
Fair enough.
The complete first season. I was not a big fan of it, but it looks good on Blu-ray.
I don't know how many of you were big fans of it.
Enough to get
it. It hasn't been canceled
it's
yet.
It's got a second season. I mean, it got a second season. Who knows? It might be competing against the event this year. I don't know. But that's out on Blu-ray, if you like sort of mid-level science fiction TV with some pretty bad green screen work. There's also, I know this is one you've been waiting for anxiously, Hannah Montana, who is Hannah Montana?
Because we'll finally find out who Hannah Montana is.
It's like, who's...
I have a feeling that she's Miley Cyrus, but I can't be sure.
Well, actually, Miley Stewart. You don't watch the show enough to know that Miley Cyrus is not the same as the character she plays.
Oh, God, this is so confusing. But why do you do this to me, Disney Channel? Just make it simple. underage girl am I supposed to feel bad about?
Wow. But the big one, of course, this week, what I consider the best Blu-ray of the week.
Definitely.
Toy Story 3 is out on Blu-ray. An unprecedented 4-disc set. If you get the full shebang, it's got...
2-disc Blu-ray,
two-disc
DVD,
Blu-ray,
and digital
DVD,
copy.
And digital copy. Loaded with special features.
You know, you can do a digital copy. You can put it on your iPad, and it's awesome.
Yeah. Or you can play it on your 1080p TV, and it would be awesome.
With your Apple TV. Bam. Yeah. I can do both of those.
But it's the best. It's the best movie of the year so far, in my opinion. It's the best. You know,
I watched the second time. It fits right in with all Pixar stuff, but yeah. It's probably not even my favorite Pixar movie. Won't end up being my favorite movie of the year.
Well, you know, right now it's right up there. But it surprised me.
It's a very good movie, though.
Yeah, it's awesome. By the way. It's a great film. So. Yeah. Definitely check that out and comes.
It's no Vampires Suck, but definitely a movie worth seeing.
Few things are.
All right, and what's the stinker this week?
Stinker 90210, the complete 10th season, which gives you the full series, if you want to stick with these people all the way to the 10th year. So
yeah, good for you. I really do not envy anyone of the people that buy that. So, all right, cool. Time to wrap up our reviews. We had, 5 movies to talk about this week.
Yeah.
For Colored Girls, we did not see. Preemptive Suck. Thanks, Lionsgate. Yeah. And you saw Due Date.
I said it kind of sucks.
And Megamind.
Kind of rocks.
And I saw 127 Hours, which definitely rocks, and Four Lions, which also definitely rocks. Wow. Go see both of those movies if you can. I only see good movies. This is kind of how.
Oh, that's not true.
Stuff goes. That's actually not true. Next week we've got a big trio. We've got Skyline, Alien Invasion,
which is not about Chile at all.
We've got Unstoppable, which will probably have some hard cuts and amazing Tony Scott flashback work, and then Morning Glory, which is not about a boner. So
wow, oh my goodness,
that is what I am told.
And
in
we
the
went
meantime,
there.
You can get us over at FatGuysInTheMovies.com. You can do all that. Just rewind the show and tell you how to get a hold of us.
Yeah,
just think about all of that as you go.
We're done.